built lives that way. So the fact that the union represents these workers historically, you know, it shows the racial dynamics of how the economy has worked and continues to work across the country and certainly in Philadelphia.
And finally, what do you see coming next? I mean, we just got the rumblings of the end of the deal, the end of the strike this morning at 4. There hasn't even been a news conference yet. Francis Ryan.
Right. I think that what the union leadership will be doing is they need to convince their members that the contract is the best one that they can get. And it's the union members themselves over the next few days that will vote upon this contract. And it's really in their hands. So I, like every other citizen in the city, we're waiting to see what the union members do. And I know that the hearts of a lot of Philadelphians are with these workers as they return back to work today.
Francis Ryan, labor historian, associate professor at Rutgers University, author of AFSCME's Philadelphia Story, Municipal Workers and Urban Power in the 20th Century. You can go to democracynow.org to see our full-time job offerings for multiple positions. democracynow.org/jobs. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks so much for joining us.
Listening to KBOO Portland.
Listen to Armando Puentes every Sunday from 1:30 p.m. to 3:30 p.m., playing the best in Tejano mixing with some traditional conjunto, as well as mariachi music and public affairs pertaining to the Latino community. That's Armando Puentes, only on KBOO Portland.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:01 a.m. Next up is Wednesday Talk Radio with Jacqueline Keeler.
Mighty hard road that my poor hand is hold. My poor feet has traveled a hot, dusty road. Out of your dust bowl and westward we rolled, and your desert was hot and your mountains was cold. In your orchards of peaches and prunes, slept on the ground in the light of your moon. On the edge of your city you've seen us, and then we come with the dust and we go with the wind. California and Arizona, I make all your crops, and it's north up to Oregon to gather your hops. Dig the beets from your ground, cut the grapes from your vine, to set on your table your light sparkling wine. Green pastures of plenty from dry desert ground, from that Grand Coulee Dam where the water runs down. Ever stayed in this union, us migrants have been. We'll work in this fight and we'll fight till we win. Well, it's always we ramble, that river and I, all along your green valley I'll work till I die. My land I'll defend with my life if it be, 'cause my pastures of plenty must always be free.
Good morning. Hi, this This is Jacqueline Keeler with bringing you Wednesday Talk Radio. Oh, sorry.
Hi, yes, this is, Jacqueline Keeler, bringing you Wednesday Talk Radio today. And this is a call-in show, so please do call in. And today we are discussing the threats coming to sanctuary cities that the Trump administration is posing. And, so please do call in if you'd like to discuss this. The number is 503-231-8187. And I would love to hear from you about this topic. What do you know about sanctuary cities, and how do you feel about the threats Portland is facing, particularly with the failure of passage of a transportation bill in Salem? We having both the border czar and the transportation secretary threatening sanctuary cities like Portland for not cooperating with ICE agents is quite. What does that mean for Portlanders and for our everyday lives? And also, how do you feel about the sanctuary city policy? And if you're someone who is whose family have been protected by it, I'd love to hear your stories, and just let me know what you think. Once again, the number is 503-231-8187. So to start off, we're going to discuss the Trump border czar. So this is Tom Homan, and he has been threatening. He actually name checked Portland on Tuesday, looks like, and he said he was going to have ICE double down on enforcement. So President Donald Trump's czar, I'm reading it from a news report in the Oregonian, reiterated an explosive warning in a televised interview Tuesday that name-checked Portland, repeatedly pledging that immigration agents would be, quote, doubling down, tripling down on enforcement in sanctuary cities. Czar Tom Homan's comments came toward the end of a six-minute interview on Fox Business in which he defended agents for U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement for what he described as, quote, hurtful rhetoric that he said compared ICE officers to Nazis, terrorists, and racists, which he believes could end in, quote, bloodshed. Yeah, he said that. He said enforcement will continue to make the, quote, country safe. Homan said some Republican-led states like Florida are cooperating with federal authorities on immigration enforcement, enabling more resources to be deployed in sanctuary cities such as Portland, New York, Chicago, and Los Angeles, which don't cooperate with federal authorities on immigration enforcement. And the Fox host teed up Homan by alleging that mayors in sanctuary cities are helping, quote, foment the violence. So this is coming from a Trump administration official, the quote-unquote border czar, Homan. The host references the small ongoing protest outside the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement office in Portland, where 22 people have been arrested since early June, and the pushback from officials in New York City, Chicago, and Boston. Homan said federal officials won't back down from doing the job Trump was voted into office to carry out, mass deportations. So he says, quote, I'm going to Portland, Homan said. I'm going out there. They are not going to bully us. So apparently Portland is bullying the Trump administration. We're going to do the job. We're doing it in Portland, too. But for the mayor of New York City and Chicago, President Trump made it clear 2 weeks ago, we're going to double down and triple down in sanctuary cities. So that marked the first of three times Homan used rhetorical talking point about increasing enforcement. So once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. And today we're talking about, sanctuary cities like Portland and how the Trump administration is weaponizing federal funding and threats of more violent enforcement tactics to try to basically extinguish sanctuary cities across the country and specifically here in Portland as well. You can call in. The number here is 503-231-8187. I'd love to hear your voices. How do you feel about this? And have you attended any of the ICE the ICE protests, and what have you seen? How have you been treated in the streets? And so, as some of you may know, the city of Portland itself joined the Sanctuary City lawsuit against the Trump administration in February. And this lawsuit was filed by California, and it alleges that recent executive orders and administrative actions illegally harm cities and states with sanctuary policies related to immigration enforcement. So that's a lawsuit that the city itself is taking part in. So it joined a coalition of local governments who are suing the presidential administration for executive orders. And actually, this is in 2017, the Portland City Council passed a resolution affirming that Portland is a sanctuary city, meaning no city funds, staff, or equipment can be used to assist with federal immigration enforcement, except to the extent required by law. Sanctuary laws and policies prioritize city and state resources for traditional law enforcement, crime-fighting efforts, and other local priorities. So that was a commitment made in 2017 by Portland, and has the present mayor in April once again affirmed the commitment of Portland to this policy. And after the president of the United States, Trump, signed two executive orders and that aimed at increasing immigration enforcement. And these orders takes aim at sanctuary cities and states like Portland and Oregon. What do you think of the sanctuary city movement? How do you feel about it? Last month in June, Portland leaders once again reaffirmed the sanctuary city status and urged peaceful protest. Many leaders in our community stood up. The Portland mayor, Keith Wilson, said, "We are here to reaffirm our fundamental right to peaceful protest, which is the cornerstone of our democracy. As a proud sanctuary city in a sanctuary state, we are committed to protecting the rights and dignity of all who live here, working together to strengthen our community." And the mayor is working closely with the governor, Tina Kotek, and also the attorney general, Dan Rayfield, to build a strong coalition to continue to uphold the values that the sanctuary cities are expressing in their refusal to participate in, I guess, what many consider to be the harassment and terrorism against immigrants and workers, undocumented workers who are doing the hard jobs that make our society work. We have a caller. Hello, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hello. I think a lot of people, maybe not KBOO listeners, but a lot of Oregonians have a misunderstanding of what sanctuary state and a sanctuary city means. Mm-hmm. It doesn't mean that we're investing a lot of money to provide safe sanctuary for folks. Mm-hmm. It simply means that the state that is supposed to have fiscal management, responsible care, and use of state income to be used for state services, mm-hmm. and state programs, not for federal services or federal agencies or federal programs. We are having sanctuary city means that the tax dollars and the income that comes into the city is to be used for the city purposes, for the city services, for the people of the city. It is not to be spent on other organizations or agencies or governments or other programs or other activities. It is like we're paying city taxes to make the city safe for everyone, but instead using those monies to bomb another country. Mm. Or, you know, it's to be using. So sanctuary state, sanctuary city, unfortunately, is not resulting in providing safety and justice and sanctuary for folks who are oppressed. We're not providing legal protections. We're not providing homes. We're not providing, you know, alternatives to the fascist increase of violence against Oregonians and Portlanders. Mm-hmm. But the sanctuary state, sanctuary city means that the money is to be spent, state money for state and city money for city. Mm-hmm. And if we made that clear to our neighbors who might be racist, who might be thinking that anyone who is doing all the work they don't want, that they're dependent upon, that they're somehow scapegoating and dehumanizing and marginalizing, is the enemy, mm-hmm. they'll be grateful to know that, hey, I want better bang for my buck. I want more value for my tax dollars. And the best way to get that is maintaining a firm, strong sanctuary state and sanctuary city. And if we're going to be humane and we're going to be investing in democracy, then we need to do what we are not yet doing, which is to provide legal protections, mm-hmm. police and law enforcement accountability, housing, employer accountability, so that people are paid living wages, and we would have state citizenship and city citizenship in which residents of the state would be able to vote on state issues and residents of a city would be able to vote on city issues.
Very interesting. So you mean that that even if they don't have American U.S. citizenship, they could have local participatory citizenship?
Correct. Uh-huh. So we are far from being a sanctuary, mm-hmm. but we need to protect at least what little money we are bringing in to be serving what that money is earmarked for.
Exactly. Well, thank you so much. That's a really great point to make and to clarify for our listeners what sanctuary city actually means. We have another caller on the line. Are they still there?
Good morning.
Good morning. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hi, Jackie. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Isn't this the same bunch that for the last 180 years whined and moaned about states' rights, used states' rights to do all kinds of nefarious things, including dividing the nation in one horrific civil war? Mm-hmm. This is the same bunch that wants to go to bat for states' rights, except when the states don't agree with the tyrant. It's pretty frightening. And secondly, Jacqueline, if you'll permit me, our first obligation is to provide sanctuary to those who have none, and that includes our unhoused neighbors.
Yeah.
Thank you for taking my call.
Definitely. Goodbye. Thank you. Thank you both for calling in. And to build on the, what is a sanctuary state, I'm going to actually read from the Oregon Department of Justice website, which they have a website saying the Oregon Department of Justice Sanctuary Promise Guidance. And so this is the law in Oregon statewide, which is as a sanctuary state since 1987. So quite a while before a lot of people were, clocking what sanctuary city or whatever that means. Oregon stands for the safety, dignity, and human rights of all Oregonians. So as a sanctuary state since 1987, Oregon stands for the safety, dignity, and human rights of all Oregonians. Oregon was the first state in the nation to pass a statewide law stopping state and local police and government from helping federal authorities with immigration enforcement. So Oregon was the very first state to do this. In the ensuing decades, the law was updated several times. To strengthen existing sanctuary laws, the Sanctuary Promise Act was passed in 2021. The act increases safety and protection measures for immigrant communities through increased support, as well as transparency and accountability regarding government interactions with federal immigration authorities. So here says in bold, it is against Oregon law for state and local law enforcement or public agencies, state and local government offices in the state of Oregon to participate directly or indirectly in immigration enforcement without a judicial warrant. So they require a judicial warrant. Oh, we have another caller. Hello. Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hello.
Hi. You're on the air.
How are you doing?
Yeah, hello.
So nice to hear you, as always. I was just thinking, I agree with the last two callers and exactly what you read before, mm-hmm. how important it is for the states to work to protect immigrants into this country. However, it would be nicer if they would get more of a collective mindset and become a regional, like California, Oregon, Washington, mm-hmm. and would come together. If you look at California's no vigilantes law, that they're potentially criminal.
In Washington State and Oregon, creating sort of a block of a policy, a bulwark, you could say. And I'm looking at the California proposed No Vigilantes Act, SB 805, would require law enforcement operating in California to clearly display identification, including name or badge number, and ban bounty hunters from immigration enforcement activities.
Exactly.
Yeah, this bill is a response to recent federal immigration raids in Southern California and aims to increase transparency and accountability in actions. So that's an excellent idea. Have you heard of anything happening here in Oregon at the state level?
No, I haven't. And the whole point is that these federal officers aren't trained in the laws in Oregon and Washington and our culture. And it's like, our police force is trained in that, and that's what they do, and they abide by the law most of the time, right? And and so that doesn't make any sense to me. And it's weird,
yeah,
to be honest.
I see that
I
see it also requires confidentiality of immigration status. It requires those authorized to apprehend bail fugitives to keep defendants' immigration status confidential rather than doing Secretary Noem going out and dressing up. Lockdown. She was trying to force the tribes to allow people to come through open traffic. Some of the Cheyenne River Sioux tribe, they had their borders blocked from non-essential traffic, and she tried to force them to take down the blockade and basically expose the community to more COVID virus. Do you mean? Is there of no And Lakota people. It's just a little kind of, yeah.
Terror. People overuse the word terror, I think, but they're fear techniques, and the fear is having, there's an intent behind the fear, and that's not right to do it in this country in this day and age, for me.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I would hope the governors would stand up and say, look, we're going to criminalize you, like whether they're coming in with balaclavas, like they're in the IRA and the guns and. I don't even know what that means anymore, to be honest with you.
Yeah, totally. I agree. It's absolutely shocking. And let me see here. All right. Continue. Once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we'd love to hear your voices and thoughts on the issue of sanctuary cities and the Trump administration's attempts to sort of really harass and stop that sort of movement in the country. And you can call in. The number here in the studio is 503-231 8187. Oh, it looks like we have another caller. Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Hi, Jacqueline.
Oh my gosh.
The hubris is crazy. You claim to worship this person and then you're going to order him around.
Oh my God.
All right. That's so awful. I made some notes because I forget sometimes. So here we got this drill, baby, drill. Well, that's going to lead to burn, baby, burn.
Yeah, yeah, totally. And we're starting to see that wildfire season now.
I think that's where he, I mean the whole planet, you know.
Yeah.
But I think that's where he got that, actually. There's an old expression, you know, like when you shoot a plane down or something like that. I don't know. Anyway, I heard Robert Reich, he's an economist, and he was talking about his last class. He wrote a book, I think, and it's the last class that he's teaching as a professor, and he's asking his students, there's Gen X, Gen this, Gen that. What are you? And they said, we're the last generation. Many
really?
Of them said, we're the... Yeah.
Oh, my God. Like, wow.
I mean, it's something that... But you mean that they are saying it, you know? I mean, we might all be wondering how much time we have, but... Yeah. Just as far as that Gen Z thing, and people talk about Gen X. I don't know if everybody knows. There was a book called Gen X. I forget the author's name. It came out in the 90s, but his premise was that because as a child, he grew up with doing these little climb under your school table, and that's going to protect you from the nuclear bomb, you know, that was like the first time in all of our history where there was a question of whether we would continue as a race, as a people, you know, as a world, yeah. So then, but then my joke about Gen Z was that, be careful, that's the end of the line.
Yeah. Oh,
A, B, C, D, you know, Z, okay. Let's go with, Trump is a terrorist.
Wow, yeah,
he's definitely... He just says, I'm going to do this. Then he says, I'm not going to do it. And all the time, all these talking heads are running around, what would this mean? Millions, hundreds of people are making lots of money off him changing his mind every week or what have you. On that again, too, I saw him on a regular news channel. I look sometimes when I'm bored. But he was talking about what was happening in Texas, and he blamed it on Biden. That was all Biden's doing now.
Yes, of course, they always go back to that. Yeah.
Well, anyway, I've got a new slogan. Mother Nature, or Mo Nature, trumps Trump.
Oh, that would be, that's very, let's manifest that. I like that.
When there's, like, so many of these things, I mean, we haven't even got into hurricane season, yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, hey, one last point, because I know you have others, I'm sure. Somebody, we were talking about civilization, the last caller. Gandhi, there's a quote from him, a reporter asked him at one time, what do you think of Western civilization? And his reply was, sounds like a great idea.
Yes, I've heard that. Yes, so true. Yeah,
I think we
can
include democracy in there.
Yeah.
I always do with democracy. When?
Exactly.
When was it? Oh, wait. One thing about these vigilante things and going back 160 years, that's how California was formed. Congress allocated money for people to kill natives that were living there.
Oh, my
yeah.
God. I know. I've heard stories. It's just horrific. Well, that's a good...
I think
might be an interesting show to look at the history of vigilanteism, basically in the creation of, a settler state. So,
yeah.
Well, thank you so much for calling in. So we got another caller. Hi, caller. You're on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Would that be me?
Yes. Hi. Welcome.
Yeah. Hi. I come from a military family, and I just want to make three quick points, and then I'm going to let you comment. Marines that are sent in to kill Americans on American soil are cowards. They don't serve our country at all. That's point one. Point two, bullies only speak one language, and it's not the legal type. Three, Adolf Hitler's policies will double the number of homeless. These will be put in concentration camps, no doubt.
Wow.
And I'm going to hang up and let you comment on that. Thank you.
Wow, that's a lot. That's a pretty heavy list there. And the last one, wow, concentration camps. I mean, he's building them. I mean, look at the alligator thing facility there in Florida, which the local tribe actually has protested because, you know, those are sites that they are trying to preserve, a nature preserve there in the Florida. Is it the Florida Keys? But anyway, so the Everglades. So yeah, I think, yeah, I can see that. I mean, and then of course you see in Israel, there, I saw reporting that they're building, Israel is building a, basically a concentration camp to house Palestinians in right now, which is a horrific, horrific idea. Destroy their homes, destroy their families and their health and well-being, and then put them in concentration camps. That's a pretty scary sound. So, okay, yes, hi, we have another caller. Hi, caller, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio. Hello?
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes, yes, you're on, loud and clear.
There's kind of an echo, as well as you may have already been told that your broadcast is kind of fading in and out some of the time this morning.
Oh, no,
so
I didn't know that.
We might hear a couple words from you and then be quiet for 15 seconds, and then maybe one of the callers is talking. So I don't know if that's fixable, or I think there's construction on Southeast 8th this morning
there
that
is.
Might be
yeah.
interfering.
Yeah.
So I had a process question and a specific sanctuary city question. On process, where is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio? Are you kind of the ongoing host? Were there a different host last time, say?
Paul Roland, who hosted the show for
a long time.
He is taking a break, and I do hope he comes back. I did co-host a show with him once a month, now I'm hosting it twice a month. So,
Do you know, was there a different person last week? Were you on last Wednesday?
No, I wasn't.
Okay, because they said it was Progressive Talk Radio, which sounded like a different name, but anyway.
Oh, well, that's a great addition. I don't know. But that's a good question.
Do you think for summer that you're pretty much going to be in, or it depends? You might be gone on sabbatical, or don't know.
I think twice a month is working for me.
Actually, the other two Wednesdays maybe will be different people then.
I believe so. Yes. Yes.
Okay. Well, we have to note for Hannah to Althea's place, so I'll try to check that with her for important state. So in sanctuary cities, you might have already talked about this, but do you think that you might have mentioned it as well? The guy who's in charge of ICE for Trump said that he's going to target Portland and some of the other, not because they're Democratic cities, but this guy who's head of ICE, he's an older white guy, he says he's going to physically come to Portland have more people arrested. And did you follow that particular thing?
Yeah, I actually opened by reading an article about that, Holman, the borders.
And you might have had a suggestion, or other callers may have, about what is sanctuary city good enough, or is it sort of symbolic? Are there other things that you think either organizers? I know that it sounds like the ICE protests on McAdam have been probably the most consistent protests over the last month or so in Portland on any issue. But are there more things that cities should do? And I guess my corresponding question on that, and I can listen or I can talk either way, is it looks like Oregonians for All, which is part of PLRC, is doing a big fundraiser in the next week or so that people could go to. But so do you have ideas? And you might have already said about what additional things people can do to protect people who are getting deported.
Yes, that's a good question. And I think bringing up the organization Oregon for All is a great sort of source to begin with. Their website is www.oregonforall.com. One word, .us. And they have some great resources for immigrant and Oregonian, refugee Oregonians, and what to do to help. I think the Some of the callers did have some very very interesting suggestions. One was to basically create more of a regional agreement between states, particularly between California, Washington, Oregon, to create a regional policy regarding sanctuary for immigrants. And then also another caller, you know, did mention, you know, more specific sort of concrete help, you know, whether it's through for, you know, legal assistance, for other forms of assistance. And that might actually be in the law that was created actually as well, because there's some mention of more. I have to review that law and stuff. So yeah, the that is on the Oregon Department of Justice website. They have a rundown of Oregon Department of Justice, the Sanctuary Promise sort of guidance. And and the law, when it was passed in 2021, didn't expand different services and things like that as well.
So, I would say that at Portland State, we've been trying to network and also have meetings specifically against deportations and immigration. Mike Schmidt, who was a progressive district attorney who lost the last election, Mike came and talked to us for an hour or so. Most of the immigration staff listened last week at Portland State, excellent Southeast Portland at the Winnemans. And Cale Turn, C-A-Y-L-E is his first name. He's with Latino Network. He's also an Oregonians for All organizer and PIRC. Cale came to that same meeting with Mike Schmidt, and Cale had a bunch of ideas of things that people can do. We also had some new organizers come as well, and they came to talk about this specific issue of deportations and immigration. So it seems like it's a really useful, specific way to fight back towards Trump, and then locally in different states and different cities.
So what kind of, I'd be very curious, what sort of things did they mention, and what kind of intrigued you, some of the different sort of policies or programs?
Yeah, I think basically Cale in particular had, he's also an elected member of the Reynolds School District Board. He ran for City Council from East County. Cale Turn, T-E-R-N is his last name, and he's interested in hearing from people. I don't have his email address on me, but he's also, I believe, he's on Facebook, even though some people are boycotting Facebook. But Cale thinks it's really important to discuss not necessarily on KBU. It's not that KBU is bad, but where there's a little bit more, what would you say, security, or people can be open to brainstorming on specific responses, per se. And we're doing, me being Portland Great Panthers, ongoing organizing in support. We just, I invited some of the ICE protesters to come to the next forum at Portland State. In fact, in Portland, you may or may not have heard, I might ask you before if you've even heard of Portland Gray, DIY Panthers. It's not that well known. But we started as a 501c3 8 years ago because some of us, Edie Salling and others, met at the Occupy ICE protest, the first year of Trump's first term. So immigration and deportations is one of the things we think is like a quintessential issue.
What was the name of maybe that? Could you say your organization again?
We're on Facebook, and not even many KBU people, staff, volunteers, or listeners don't use Facebook, but it's Portland Gray, G-R-A-Y, Panthers, P-A-N-T-H-E-R-S. There's also an email address. I can give you that, or either way. Gray Panthers was started by Maggie Kuhn, K-U-H-N. She's in Wikipedia, so that's one way to find out. She started in 1970. She was anti-racist, anti-war, and she started it because she got fired from her church job, a job loss issue, because allegedly she was too old at age 65. We're going to do a Maggie Kuhn birthday party in August that people can come to find out more about her in specific. So thanks for doing your program.
Thank you so much for calling in. Yeah, really, really great. Yeah, I see that the Portland Gray Panthers are on Facebook. You can join their group. It's a private group. So, I thought that what I would do is also to read from a bit about President Trump's executive order that he signed in April, protecting American communities from criminal aliens, which targets sanctuary cities. The order directed Attorney General and Secretary of Homeland Security, Noem, who we were just discussing, to publish a list of jurisdictions that obstruct federal immigration law enforcement. It also threatened to withhold or terminate federal funding from these jurisdictions. So we have another caller. Hi, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio. Hello?
Hello?
Hi, you are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Yes, good morning. I was listening to one or two callers ago, a veteran.
Yes, yes.
What he said prompted me to want to call all of you.
Oh, thank
you. And first off, I want to give props to that man, and I hope that, you know, we have more veterans speaking up in the same manner.
I agree.
And when he mentioned, like, that the homeless will be put into camps, it triggered a memory of back in 2020, I was working for state and federal government in the capacity of migrant education specialist. And my boss, we're driving down the road. I live in Salem, and we have a lot of homeless in Salem. And he commented, as we're looking at people, saying something about how he thinks they should be put in some kind of building, locked up or something. I can't remember what he said exactly. And I was in a position of, like, I got to be careful what I'm saying because this is the boss, right? But I'm just saying that to express that feeling has been out there, and I'm sure that it's probably more today. And I'm certain that that what he said is correct, that homeless people will, because they're already targeted and already demonized and already portrayed as all criminals. And I just like to say that I work with the homeless in Salem, sometimes paid, sometimes volunteer.
Great work.
So my eyes are open to who's out there, all kinds of people. And the number of women has increased. It's usually just like 50-50. It didn't used to be like that. As this big beautiful bill takes place, I'm certain that you're going to see a great increase in the number of homeless. Out of all the people that get Medicare, a lot of people who are on Medicare, that Medicare pays for them to have some place to stay, because Medicare pays for people who need like constant care in a care home. Those people are going to be out on the streets, and as hospitals close because of all those changes, those people are going to be in the streets. It's just going to exacerbate the problems.
I totally agree. I see that too with the Medicaid cuts, and also they're making it more difficult. They want people to work, work requirement, which is kind of a strange, you know, being ill means that you can't work, right? And taking people's Medicaid away, their health care, and then demanding that they somehow work for it when they're becoming sicker and sicker. And of course, and you're right, that the threat to rural hospitals and other care facilities where they're taking away their funding is going to affect, more and more people. I think the number was 12 million people in this country, are going to lose their health insurance with the big, beautiful bill.
I remember the number repeated over and over again was 17 million.
17 million. Oh, my God. Maybe I'm a bit in denial there. Yeah, 17 million.
A lot of people were quoting studies done by, I think it was Yale, or at least two universities studied or made predictions on who's going to die and who's going to be,
my God,
like, what's going to happen to people. There's also, like, believable numbers out there of who is going to die because of this legislation, let alone the people that are going to be homeless and not having access to health care.
Wow. That is amazing. Yeah, I'm looking here at a June 3rd Yale School of Public Health post saying proposed changes to Medicaid, other health programs could lead to over 51,000 preventable deaths. Jeez.
That's it. Yeah.
I'm sure there's more to the fund. Yeah, loss of coverage for 7.7 million people, disenrollment of 1.38 million low-income Medicare beneficiaries, elimination of Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Service, nursing home staffing rules. So, wow, that's awful. Well, thank you for calling in. Yeah, that's Yeah, so that's another component of the sort of violence being done against the most vulnerable in our population by this administration. So this sort of refusal to care, right, to care about people. Thank you so much. I'm going to continue reading about President Trump's executive order from April 28, 2025, protecting American communities from criminal aliens. This is Wednesday Talk Radio, and we've been talking about the Trump administration's assault on sanctuary cities and funding, particularly we're also looking at the travel funding, the transportation funding, I should say, which the Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy recently issued an order threatening to withhold federal transportation funding from, quote, sanctuary cities. And so we have a caller. You are on the air. Hello? Are they still there? Hi. Santiago?
Hello?
Hello, I can barely hear you. Hello? He's very, very soft.
Okay, let me try to tell you that I'm kind of in denial.
Yes, I can hear you there.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
I'm kind of in denial.
Uh-huh.
No longer do I get upset or angry about what's happening. But first, I would like to thank you. I would like to thank KBU for presenting Democracy Now! I love it.
Great show. Yes, I met Amy Goodman. Actually, we share a birthday, and we at Standing Rock we kind of celebrated our birthday together. That was amazing. So,
oh, that's great! I mean, my parents turned me on to that program years ago.
Yeah,
my dad said to me, "Oh, you got to see this," and I've been a fan ever since.
Wow! Yeah, she's an amazing woman, and it's a great program. And so, yeah.
Well, I want to make a comment about how I'm saving energy in my house now.
Uh huh.
Every time Trump comes on the TV, I turn it off.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of turning off, I'd have to say. He tends to just totally get into all of our heads, you know, and never leaves. So
I'm in denial, but I'm happy. Bye.
Yeah. Well, some self-care is needed at times like this as well, mental self-care. I certainly recommend that. So as I noted, definitely call in. We have about 10 minutes left in the show, and this is Wednesday Talk Radio. The number is 503-231-8187, and we are discussing sanctuary cities and recent comments made by Trump officials, particularly the border czar, Homan, about basically really cracking down on cities, and actually he name-checked Portland specifically, that they were going to step up pressure 2 to 3 times and bring in more agents. And then, of course, the U.S. Transportation Secretary Sean Duffy recently issued an order threatening to withhold federal transportation funding from sanctuary cities. And this is coming at a time when Oregon, the state legislature, failed to pass a transportation bill. And so Portland would be facing losses in transportation monies coming both at the federal level and at the state level. His action is part of a broader effort by this administration to penalize jurisdictions that limit cooperation with federal immigration enforcement. As a caller noted earlier, that sanctuary cities doesn't mean we're like providing them services or defending them or housing them. It just means that we have directed, the state has directed, and the city, that's all state law enforcement not to use resources or spend money allocated for, law enforcement in this country on federal immigration enforcement. And so the order, which Duffy passed, prioritizes funding for jurisdictions that cooperate with immigration enforcement. And I'm guessing that means that the money that would have gone to states like Portland and other sanctuary cities would then be redirected to to red states and red cities, Republican-leaning cities, Trump-supporting cities. What do you think of that? Hi, we have another caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
This Hi. Is Victoria.
Hi, hello.
I've lived in Oregon now since 2012. Mm-hmm. I moved here from Canada, from British Columbia. Oh. But that's another story. So I've been studying collapse and, you know, collapse of Western civilization as well as other subjects, historical things. And this is what President Trump is doing, is the fear thing. That's what you do. You get people afraid, and that's how you can better manage them, according to that, you know, particular play historically. And it's just the only thing that will ever change all this is if there's a general revolution, a general, you know, people get together and push back and disallow the fear. You know, they mutual aid, help each other. So local efforts can join each other, but mostly it starts grassroots, local. And that's what I'm counting on, and that's what I do. I help out locally. But I'm all about providing food to people who don't have the money for food. Their money goes to rent and gasoline to get to their jobs. So that's my leg up for the folks that are struggling.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea to choose something that you can contribute as well. I think at this time, we can all feel a bit overwhelmed and helpless as Trump and his cronies, quote, flood the zone and make it seem like every day there's something more crazy going on, and you just begin to lose track of what you can actually do. And focusing on something concrete, like what you're doing, is such an important way of dealing with that and helping, still helping in a real way. And thank you for calling in. So once again, this is Wednesday Talk Radio, and I'm your host, Jacqueline Keeler. We are discussing Portland's status as a sanctuary city and the Trump administration's threats to sanctuary cities, and in particular, Portland. And what do you think of that? How do you feel about that? We have several minutes. You can call in 503-231-8187. Oh, and we have another caller. Hello, caller. You are on Wednesday Talk Radio.
Good morning. How are you today?
Good morning. Good. Doing good.
Good. Good. Well, you know, it's interesting. The nice, kind lady who just called, who moved here from British Columbia.
Yes.
You know, I lived in British Columbia in the interior, a town called Kelowna. Mm-hmm. And when I moved there, you know, I could not just move to Kelowna. It took me almost a year and a half, 2 years to get all my paperwork because Canada would not allow me to come in. And so I believe what the president is doing is actually good. We just can't allow, you know, illegals just to invade our country and set up these so-called sanctuary cities for all these criminals. I think he's doing a good job cleaning our country up. And we welcome all peoples from all over the world, but we welcome them legally and through the right avenues to come into our country.
Okay. All right, we haven't heard that point of view. Thank you for calling in and offering it.
Yes, absolutely.
And
a lot of what is happening is we're getting a lot of criminals and coming from different countries. These countries are you know, emptying out their prisons. And yes, there are some hardworking people coming here to our country, and you know, I don't blame them, but we need to do it legally and through the right methods and processes that our country has set up many, many years ago through our Constitution.
Yeah, well, there have been a lot of attempts to try to create such a process, a more ordered process. I saw a recent podcast about, you know, farmers and you know, orchardists who are, you know, voting for Trump and then upset that, you know, their produce is not being picked, right? Their crops are not being picked.
I understand.
And
yes.
So there is this sense that basically, you know, there's a disconnect between what is actually happening and what needs to happen, right? We need an orderly immigration process, but those have been very partisan and haven't been able to be done. And actually, the last one they had, I think, didn't Trump order them to kill it? So I'm looking at the numbers of, approximately how many are violent criminals, right, who are being apprehended by ICE. And it says here 65% of individuals apprehended by ICE in recent times had no criminal convictions, according to the Cato Institute. Furthermore, more than 93% of those booked into ICE detention had no violent criminal convictions. And this indicates that the majority of individuals apprehended by ICE are not violent criminals, and many have no criminal record at all. And I should note that the when I was in Phoenix earlier this year, I'm a Navajo citizen, and so I was talking to Navajo citizens, citizens of the Navajo Nation, one of the largest tribes in the United States, and which has a reservation the size of Ireland in Arizona, New Mexico, and Utah. And there were Navajo citizens being picked up by ICE because they look brown, right, and being held. And so it's and it was very traumatizing. And the Navajo Nation has not done a great job about issuing tribal IDs. They have 400,000 members. Only about 7,000 have tribal IDs. So having to, carry around something like your certificate of degree of Indian blood has become a requirement, as well as, sort of your paper tribal identification. And so it's it does seem like, I don't know. I mean, the fact that Navajos, there are many thousands of Navajos living in Phoenix, are feeling threatened, because that, and a lot of other tribal members are, because they're brown.
I understand that.
And it's very racially targeted.
The problem actually started many, many years ago when we opened our borders, or we didn't protect our borders, didn't put up a wall.
Well, it seems like we haven't actually done.
Many of our politicians.
Well, the problem is,
Democrats,
sorry, excuse me.
Just let anybody in.
You've already stated this. Yeah. The wait, hold on a second. Okay, let me talk. I just need to talk. So the issue is, you've already said that, and the issue is that we could review. There's hasn't been a good faith effort to basically to make sure that migrant workers who come in for these jobs that Americans don't want, Americans don't want to do the, a lot of the farmers and folks, you can see that they are saying that their crops are rotting, and that Americans who take the jobs don't last more than 10 minutes in the fields. And so they don't, are not able to have a step to have their orchards and their produce picked. So it's quite, we're going to feel this at the when we're shopping, the prices of things are going to go up, and basically these migrant workers are subsidizing our lives. They're making it easier for us to purchase our produce. They're doing jobs that Americans won't do. Did he just hang up? So anyway, sorry. Yeah, I had to I think that it's pretty clear that there has not been a good faith effort to create a workable immigration policy, and certainly the Republican Party has not done that. And that there is a sort of a gain where farmers and orchard owners and folks, that they have power over their workers who do not have the proper paperwork. And so those workers are unable to really speak up for themselves and to fight for their rights or to turn to the police when they are. We need to develop a policy that allows workers to come in, and we need to be able to pay salaries. I think Trump administration policies had impacted farmers' bottom line, they were given a bunch of subsidies to cover Trump's policies, and it may happen again with these tariffs, right? Although even with the cancellation of USAID, a lot of farmers that provide food and grow food for the government had contracts have lost out, and so. The policies to put food on our tables, to build our houses, to all the jobs that immigrants do and are absolutely crucial to our lifestyle as Americans, across the country. I would say even on reservations in the poorest communities there, the cost of food deserts where the cost of food is very high, but it would be even higher without the role that migrant workers play in harvesting that food. This idea that they're really picking up and cleaning up criminals, just go on to go on to social media, TikTok, and listen to what farmers are saying. They're realizing that, oh, they're not just going after criminals or even voters like even Cuban voters and Venezuelan voters who voted for Trump's policies are being impacted with family members being deported because they thought, oh, it's just going to be criminals. But no, it's everyone. And it's even American citizens who are being deported and Native Americans whose ancestors have lived here for tens of thousands of years are being picked up and told that they have to prove that they're not illegal. Right. So it's very racialized. It's not being conducted in a way that preserves a due process of the law. And that's really all that is required. And of course, we have the Supreme Court, at the top there, very much a Republican majority issuing, shadow docket decisions with no explanation of what they mean, and it's very hard to get a sense of the law being enforced in an equitable way, and certainly the policies we have in place regarding immigration and migrants. It does seem to many that it's set up that way on purpose so that they have no rights where we can then exploit them and enjoy the kind of lifestyle that they are subsidizing for all Americans. So we're coming to the end of the show. Thank you for all the callers. And my name is Jacqueline Keeler, and this has been Wednesday Talk Radio.
You're listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The time is 8:59 a.m.
Hard road that my poor hand is hold. My poor
KBOO Portland.
A hot, dusty road.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public